Hello listener, welcome to Switch It. Who fancies a bat? The County Championship is back and so far it's been runs for fun, even in the absence of much sun. April is the cruelest month, said T.S. Eliot, and it seems likely he was thinking about English seamers bowling with a Kookaburra ball. Sam Northeast began the gluttony by chalking up the first of 39 hundreds over the first two rounds of the season, and he carried right on to break Graham Gooch's 34-year-old record for the highest first-class score at Lord's. Middlesex, in particular, have had it tough, conceding totals of 620 for 3 and 552 for 6. So we thought, who better to ask about the ECB's ongoing experiment with the Kookaburra than their captain, Toby Rowland-Jones, who will be joining us shortly. First up, it's time to welcome today's studio guests, emerging bright-eyed and ready for the summer. Two men who love nothing better than to bed in and flay the opposition about on a flat one. ESPN Cricinfo UK editor Andrew Miller and associate editor Vitushan Hantaraja. Good to see you both. Miller, never mind the Kookaburra, you've been on Kingfisher watch for the last few weeks.
Damn right. I haven't seen them a couple of days now. I think mother's on the nest now. So I'm still down there, peering out of the bushes like something very dodgy every morning. But yeah,
we won't go into that.
But no, it's been amazing.
This is Hackney, of course.
In the wilds of East London.
Doing all sorts.
We've got a pair of kingfishers. Very, very, very busy. So yeah, lots of fun.
All available to see on your Twitter feed, of course, and some of your own handiwork.
Are you drawing as well?
I went to visit my mum the other day. She's painting like nobody's business. And so, fine, let's all sit down. So the most wholesome thing we've ever done as a family. There were like five of us, my two daughters, wife, me, my mum, all painting. And yeah, I came up with a kingfisher that looks more like a pigeon with a helmet, with a pointy nose helmet. But you know.
I think you've done yourself a disservice. As someone with an A-level in art, I've been very proud to have churned that out. Vish, last time we spoke on the pod, was following England's Dharamshala demolition, I think. Have you been putting those fleeces to good use in the early rounds of the season?
Well, I've had to, yeah. I was going to say, the last time I saw a kingfisher was in India as well. It's been nice to be back.
Yeah.
They often came in pairs as well, actually. it's been a. I kind of went into India with a select, set of clothes for that last test, given how warm everything was before that, and I've basically not had to. All my summer clothes are still in my suitcase, but my Dharamshala wear has been put to good use.
You're a man who likes a good jumper, so.
Well, exactly, yeah. So it's this is my season.
Yeah. And while we're on the subject of ornithology, Miller, is it fair to describe the Kookaburra as more dead than your average Norwegian blue?
it hasn't had much fun this summer so far, has it? I mean, to have an entire round or two rounds in one result, no result at all in the last round. I mean, it's not been a successful experiment, has it? But it, I guess let's ask the expert. But Toby Rowland-Jones can give us a better insight into quite what it's been like, but. As a spectacle, it's, watching Sam Northeast 300 was interesting, but and there've been a few incidental magical moments for a few batters along the way, but broadly speaking, it's been a lot of hard yakka and not a lot of reward, but let's see whether it gets any more interesting in the second Kookaburra round later on in the summer. That could be better conditions for it.
We're all looking forward to that. As with so often with cricket, it's about the long game, so, the Ashes in about 15 years' time when we've produced several 90-mile-an-hour bowlers and wrist spinners. Aside from that, Vish, what are the early season narratives you've been following? I think you're on the trail of spinners, or one spinner in particular, on your trip up to the north.
Yeah, I went to Lancashire for the first round to see Nathan Lyon and Tom Hartley play together. We kind of knew they were going to play together because Dale Bekenstein, the head coach, mentioned that on Tuesday, so we kind of ruined any of the intrigue going into it because he said they were both going to play, and of course it rained on the first day, so that was brilliant. And then they ended up bowling to the end of the second day after Dan Lawrence and Cameron Steele with the spin joy who ran through Lancashire. So the narrative is leg spin's back and it's cool again. So this has always been cool, hasn't it? But now it's being done by people who you didn't think were cool.
Well, we are going to hear it from Cameron Steele a bit later on. And the other thing, I suppose, that this season, Miller, Surrey going for the three-peat, be the first county to do that since the 60s, I think, and Alex Stewart stepping down as well. So, you know, lots to keep an eye on at the Oval, as always.
Yeah, well, I don't see it going Jurgen Klopp for them with the way they've come out the blocks. I mean, that run chase they tried to pull off yesterday with, you know, chasing, what, 200 in about 20 overs and gave it a good go. I mean, they look a formidable unit, don't they? I mean, they've got everything you could possibly need. They've got proper pace in Gus Atkinson, who's had success. They've got proper batters all the way through. They've got a wicketkeeper in Ben Foulkes, who's probably going to be surplus. And we can come to that later in the summer, but we don't even need to think about that until July, do we? So, you know, he's going to be there trying to prove a point for all these seven rounds. I mean, it would be astonishing if they don't emerge by the end of this early period very much in the running and probably ahead of the running. Although, at the moment, Essex are doing their usual thing of punching above their weight as
the only team to have won a game.
Indeed. And nearly two. So, yeah, we shall see. But, yeah, I mean, they do look like, as I've described them as a Death Star in previous pods, and I kind of stand by that. They do look ready to zap all comers in all directions this summer.
Essex are top of Division 1, but that's pending a potential penalty for the size of Feroz Kushi's bat. Any ideas why that hasn't actually come out yet, been announced? Surely they've measured it. They know how big it was, and that's kind of an open and shut case, isn't it?
Well, maybe they just realised it would be a really, really rubbish way to ruin the only result of the year so far. But yeah, I don't have a particular answer. Really? Although it was notable, he didn't use his bat at all in the second match. He shouldered arms his first ball and lost his off stump.
So. Learned his lesson, yeah. So I spoke to Sam Cook last week for an interview on Quick Info ahead of what was going to be the only result of these two rounds. Not that we knew it at the time, but he mentioned that it did pass through the second time. So I'm not entirely sure how that works.
It's a bit like the ball going through the gauge, is it? So,
yeah,
it doesn't fit one way, but shuffle it. And
it might have something to do with tape. He didn't know because he was padding up to be the night watch. But yeah.
So, because wood swells, isn't it? So maybe, you know, he kept it in a bucket of water or something. And
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Damn Parrot Field.
Too much linseed oil.
Hi Toby, welcome to Switch. Thanks for coming on. Hope you've got your feet up after the start of the season that Middlesex have had.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice day off. Obviously, just finished up in Northampton now after the first round of two games. So, yeah, not as much bowling as I possibly have done over the last few years at this stage of the year. So, yeah, fit and ready to go.
Yeah, you've now won the toss as Middlesex's captain and opted to bowl twice. I was wondering when you got into sadomasochism.
Yeah, I had to remind me of that early doors. Yeah, it's certainly been a bit of a topic of conversation when we've been batting for long periods. But yeah, I mean, it's one of the things, I guess, that the Kookaburra's raised of when's the best time to use the ball. And yeah, obviously it's been tricky, but I think fundamentally, I mean, the way that we've batted as well has shown that, I guess, the conditions have been pretty level across the board and there's not really been any time where the ball's been able to get on top. So yeah, it's been hard work to decide, but yeah, hopefully a little bit learned.
And presumably, you were sort of hoping first third season at Lords it might nibble about a bit more. But what is the view, the candid view in the dressing room of the Kookaburra? And you can swear on this podcast.
Yeah, I think particularly Lords, you know, that the lead up to that game was particularly wet. You know, and they'd done a great job on the surface, and it still looked like a good pitch. But we felt like first use would be the one. And yeah, I guess the main thing we found across both games is probably the pace of the wicket just hasn't been there. And once you get through that first 10 overs, the ball really softens, and that combined with the slow surface has led to some pretty turgid cricket, and also, you know, in fairness, some pretty determined and dogged batting, and you know, a lot of guys who seem pretty determined to make an early mark on their season, and certainly in our games, yeah. The batting has dominated across the board.
Toby, can I ask, did you see these first two rounds coming in the fact that there was only, you know, one win in the 16 games? Because while obviously the logic behind the Kookaburra is that because it does less than the Duke's ball, bowlers have to, I suppose, be quicker, be better, as it were. But the pitches don't seem to be conducive to a Kookaburra. And that, I feel like that's something that's been the case throughout the start of, you know, many summers before this one?
Well, I think, you know, the one thing we had was pre-season, obviously getting used to it, both from a bowling and batting point of view. And I guess the conditions that we trained with and in the warm-up matches still meant that it was more conducive to bowling than we've probably found in the matches. But certainly, you know, the lack of pace was still pretty evident in that build-up. But I wouldn't say that we thought it would be batting dominated for sure. I think we thought it might be a slightly more even contest and that we'd have to sort of, I guess, calibrate what would be a par score, probably leading into bowling first and trying to get a gauge of conditions in that way. But certainly didn't think that, you know, the games would end up where they have been. Obviously, we've had two declarations in the first innings and we've gone past them both times. So, yeah, we certainly didn't expect to see that.
As a seam bowling unit, is it how important is it to take positives where you can? I mean, in terms of, you know, just the discipline required, the line, the length, the accuracy that I think, as everyone has always known, the Kookaburra, you benefit from accuracy. I mean, when James Anson went to Australia and won the Ashes out there, the mantra was don't get cut. I mean, how many good lessons can you take out of that as a seam bowling unit, even if, you know, on the pitch you're not getting the rewards at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's just part of it, is just being really honest with your assessment in how you've bowled. We certainly felt like in the first game, we certainly didn't bowl at our best. Whether we could have really changed the fortunes of the game is another matter with the sort of surface and the ball conditions. But certainly up at Northampton, felt like we actually bowled far better, bowled really nicely. Every bowler bowled with good rhythm and accuracy, like you mentioned. And I guess it's then trying to be a little bit creative with what we can do. But I guess the main thing we've found is on both surfaces, the short ball has almost been, you know, removed from the game in some ways with the lack of pace. So trying to go to sort of different plans throughout the innings has been tougher and tougher. And as I mentioned, credit to, we've had a couple of batters in particular who've, you know, really, you know, made us pay, I guess, once they've got in and made hard work. And certainly our batters have matched that, you know, in kind once they've had their chance. So, yeah, it has been hard to analyse, but definitely you still have to, you know whether you've hit your metrics and whether the guys have performed well enough. And certainly we improved into this week.
I mean, has it been, Toby, as captain and, you know, one of those, I don't mean this to sound bad in any way, hopefully it doesn't, one of those traditional English seamers who does well with the Duke's ball, has it been a sort of twin challenge? You've got to come up with your own sort of personal method of making the Kookaburra talk, if it will at all. But you've also got to be looking at the overall picture from the team perspective and the tactics of, you know, how you're going to try and get a wicket when it starts to go soft in those middle overs.
Yeah, it certainly has been tricky. I mean, like I said, when we practice, sort of, I guess, in the warm-up games, and, you know, we've been in a 10 for pretty much all of March. Certainly there was still, you know, it was seen friendly enough, and bowlers were certainly making life very tricky for batsmen then. And then, like you said, I guess it's a case of readjusting and trying to find your own personal method for being effective. Certainly, I think the one thing that looks like it's pretty widespread across the country is if you haven't got the airspeed, if you like, if you've not got bowlers who can bowl, you know, upwards of 85 mile an hour, with this time of year and the conditions and in the cold is not particularly common, then, yeah, it's been pretty tricky to, I guess, get too much of a reaction out the surface with these balls once you're past that sort of opening period.
I mean, and we've seen in other parts of the country, other games, like spin coming into it much more. I mean, I guess that is part of the intention of using the ball. And do you, you know, yourself and within the dressing room kind of see what the aim is here, even if you're not really expecting to get kind of results this summer or the next summer, but down the line, you're sort of trying to build, give players the skill sets to deal with those different ball and how that reacts in the conditions.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, going back to as a captain, I enjoy always feeling like, you know, spin's an option at any time of the game is a great thing to have. But I guess on the flip side, it for us, it's been the same thing where I guess the lack of pace has made it really tricky for the spin to be effective as well. But certainly, I think, like you said, around the country, there has definitely been an increase. We'd argue it's still the right conditions for spin to prosper is probably another thing. Pitches not being probably as dry as you'd want for spin to really thrive and for there to be sort of genuine turn and bounce. But I guess it's never a bad thing to feel like, you know, there's every part of the game in play and for spin to still play a prominent role throughout the year.
Is it fair on county cricketers that this experiment in these circumstances, as you say there, if the weather isn't conducive to creating the sort of hard pitches that you might get in Australia that really benefits the use of the Kookaburra, you know, just exposing bowlers and putting miles in legs for so little reward. I mean, you know, morale wise, how do you keep your chins up when, you know, as you say, if you aren't in a 85-90 mile an hour bowler in these conditions, you're going to struggle to make an impact, aren't you?
Yeah, and it has been tricky for sure. I think the main thing really relates back to, I guess, what the genuine purpose is for the experiment as such, is just try to find out if it is exclusively to find those bowlers with that little bit extra. I would argue probably the middle of the summer is still the time which is going to be the best for that, where pitches are a bit hard and there's a little bit more pace in the wicket. But I guess, like all things, it's sometimes you find out by doing, don't you? You know, you can obviously always guess and I guess have ideas of what might happen, but fundamentally at some point it's worth a trial to see the guys can deliver in different circumstances with different balls. I'd say that it's not produced, I think, the most exciting cricket, which is probably the main thing that's a bit of a shame from our side, is that we've not really had the competitive edge to our games going into the third and fourth day, which is a little bit of a shame, you know, when you're gearing up for a season where you want to be challenging and making inroads early in the season.
And I'm old enough to remember probably the last great ball experiment that English cricket underwent in 1990, when a great hero of the pod and a chap you know well, Angus Fraser, I suppose, was one of the few seamers who emerged that summer with credit, despite the fact not particularly quick. Again, the accuracy required to transcend what was, I think it was a duke with a smaller seam that summer, wasn't it? Do you see any diamonds in the rough from what you've seen out there, guys who perhaps have shown more ability in this hard yakka than perhaps might have been seen if the ball was hooping everywhere?
I mean, I guess it's always hard when you haven't seen, I guess, the conditions of the pitch. I mean, certainly Sam Cook obviously looked like he bowled particularly well up at Trent Bridge in that first week, but I don't think that's unearthing anything. I think he's been a fine performer for a number of years now. So I think he's only just strengthened his claim to being one of the more consistent and, I guess, prominent performers in that first division. And then I guess sort of the likes of Atkinson, and it looked like Aldridge with maybe a little bit of pace and a bit of awkward bounce between them. It looked like they had, you know, a little bit more threat at the oval from what I saw. I guess those things are good. Obviously, Gus has had some recognition already this winter, but is still, I guess, a little bit younger and hasn't played a great deal of games. But certainly, you know, even though they'll have seen a lot of him, looks like, you know, again, he's someone who can crank numbers up a little bit more and still pose as much threat as I think anyone can in those middle overs with a Kookaburra and the conditions that we face. So someone like him comes out obviously with, I guess, extended credit, but I don't think there's any particular findings or unearthings. I think it's more, I guess, strengthening the claims of guys that were already there, really.
And just on kind of entertainment and excitement you mentioned there, Toby, like you think of you know, the county game is often just portrayed as kind of there to serve England, but it is, you know, of itself a product of competition. You know, fans go to county games and kind of do want to see results, do want to see games progressing towards a conclusion. Is that, I mean, give us the bowler's perspective here, but this seems like it's tilted the balance perhaps a bit too far towards the bat. Is there that still that place for kind of a lively green wicket where the bowling gets on top and you might get a finish in 2.5 days, even if that's not what preparing people for test cricket particularly?
Yeah, and I think all of those things will always need to be in balance. I think probably, at times the Dukes can go too far the other way in the wrong conditions. There's no doubt about that. And I guess the question mark can be if teams do need results, whether they can almost ensure that there'll be a surface there which will produce something with a Dukes ball, which I think the ECB have been pretty keen to eliminate and make sure surfaces are as good as possible. But yeah, like I said, all these things come in balance. I think you always want to see, I think, a good contest between bat and ball. I think, what makes great players great, it's not always their ability to produce the best wickets. It's actually sometimes when conditions aren't in their favour, they're the ones who still find a way to negate and to still find a way to look like, the conditions suit them, even if the ball's moving around. And that's why those guys find their way to the top. I think that there's an understanding of that, even when you're watching, that when the game's tough, those guys manage to get through the tough periods and then really make it count. So I think that's probably something that's been missing a little bit is the jeopardy of, batters having to still sort of fight for their life once they get through that new ball. It's probably been more a question of just concentration rather than having to sort of, I guess, battle conditions and the bowler as much, I think.
Bats get bigger, boundaries get smaller. I mean, do you ever question your choices when you have to pick up the kookaburra again for a new spell?
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, the joys of being captain is, yeah, the next two rounds I might find myself just, yeah, sitting and watching during the middle of the summer. But yeah, it is exactly that. We've got two rounds coming now and all of this will be interesting, I guess, to put into almost those decision-making sort of elements and seeing whether, I guess, hopefully some slightly faster surfaces in the middle of summer once we actually get a little bit more heat, whether we can actually produce some wickets that might, I guess, see the cooker perform as it does in other countries where, it still does have a threat through the middle overs. I think, like I mentioned, for us in particular, not feeling like the short ball's in play when the ball's not moving and there's not much pace in the wicket, certainly feels like it takes out a lot of the threatening elements. So, hopefully that'll be something in the middle of the summer that we see. And as we mentioned earlier, maybe spin playing a slightly more prominent role as well might make them more balanced games.
Have you already got a Dukes ball in your hand right now? Just getting yourself psyched up for Friday.
I actually haven't. Yeah, I looked at one the other day, and just even the colour of it just made me smile. that sort of dark maroon colour, yeah, just sort of really, yeah, I've missed that. But yeah, there are a few guys, when you travel with a squad in particular, obviously guys who weren't playing, making themselves, as ready as they can be for the next game if required, were bowling with it, and certainly, yeah, I think a few of them were. We're enjoying the feeling out of the hand and yeah, a little bit more pace and carry off the wicket. So yeah, we'll be training tomorrow with it and yeah, it'll be interesting to I guess see the difference. But I guess one real positive is to have guys going into this run of games now in a batting unit that have scored heavy runs as well for us is a real positive. It's been shared across our top five really nicely. So I guess, guys are in as good a place as possible now to combat any challenges that come their way from the change.
There's some last year, 4 for 4, I suppose, when talking about the batting, that first innings against Essex. I mean, as you say, you've got Luce Duploy has come in, got big runs. It feels a much more solid unit all of a sudden, even albeit the conditions with the kookaburra have mitigated that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, one thing to credit, I guess, all around the country is that, as I alluded to with concentration, that a flat ball and a flat wicket doesn't always relate to runs. I think it definitely looks like there's a number of guys wanting to put their hands up and to really sort of, I guess, make big runs is the thing that's really, I guess, stood out across the country, is when guys have got in the hunger and the determination to get, you know, whether it's a big 100 or turn into a double. Yes, it's certainly as high as I've seen at this time of year. And we've certainly, you know, obviously had two guys already make double. Obviously, Lewis, like you said, that would have been great and was four runs short. And no doubt he would have kept going if we'd have got out there again on day four. So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously great for us to see that. And obviously young Nathan Fernandez coming in, and I think he's the first Middlesex player in history to get 100 in the first innings of his debut, which, you know, for a club with our history is a pretty staggering stat, and certainly one that yeah, stands him in good stead moving forward.
Lovely. Well, hope you get a really dark, shiny, seem like a rope Dukes out of the box on Friday, and the batters give you plenty of feet up time as well. Thanks for coming on, Toby.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, then, that's the considered view from a professional. Time for some armchair number wang after a combination of the weather and the beneficent batting conditions produced 17 draws out of 18 over the first two rounds of the championship. I'm just going to throw out a lot of this at you both. The Division 1 average, 39.9. Division 2 batting average, 51. There were 12 hundreds in the opening round, which had a lot of rain as well. One triple, one double. 27 hundreds in the second round, including four doubles. 11 fifers for bowlers. Cameron Steele and Alex Thompson of Derbyshire, who have taken two. You mentioned Sam Cook at the top, Vish, who claimed a 10 for at Trent Bridge. That's it. That's the one game. Two have produced the result. Nine draws out of nine in the second round. That's only the third time that's happened in an 18-team county championship. What do you make of that, Miller?
Well, I tell you what, the number that stood out was 11 fifers. That surprised me, actually. It felt like more success for Hard Yakker than I was perhaps expecting. I mean, it doesn't quite match up to 3,900, but at least someone got to feel a little bit of good at the end of it. But no, I mean, suppose, you know, to go back to that as well, I suppose the performance that stands out is Sam Cook for being the 10-for that won the only match out of 18. I mean, to be, you know, we've known he's been a decent bowler for a long time, but I think, you know, as I was saying to Toby just then, just talking about, does this separate the wheat from the chaff? I think if the intention is to separate the wheat from the chaff, I thought his performance in that first round was a proper marker to have laid down. Interesting that he had a niggle for the second round. Probably didn't need to go through the Yakker second time round. He's like, you know what? I'll just store that up and come back with the Dukes. But you know, he's a magnificent bowler who averages less than 20, and even with a Kookaburra that was just doing nothing for anyone else, he found the combination of accuracy and sufficient pace as well, which I think is significant. He's not a pop gun bowler. I was talking to Jordan Cox before the season began, and Zach Crawley for that matter, and both of them sort of had inadvertent pops at the dear departed Darren Stevens, you know, saying, you know, having a
not dead,
having six, six, 60 mile an hour piddly bowlers you can place five shots to and nick off to is not the same as a bowler who's going to just attack you and force you to make an instant decision and react accordingly. And I think that's the encouragement that you get out of knowing that the bowlers you're facing are not going to be swinging it all around corners, and you can trust your shots, encourages the bowlers likewise to have to maintain the discipline to know that if they err, they will get punished. And I think that is the thing that stood out from Cook's performance. He doesn't err. He never does. I mean, that's the one thing he's always done. He's always targeted the stumps. He's always had enough of a bouncer to push people back and keep them honest. But fundamentally, he keeps the stumps in the game and therefore the edge in the game. And he kept Essex in the game. So, I, you know, in spite of everything, triple centuries and all the rest of it, he's clearly the man of the Kookaburra round for me.
I mean, you spoke to him, Vish, after that. This is arguably a pretty good summer for him to make an impression. Not that we're retiring Jimmy Anderson prematurely, but there's no Stuart Broad. some question marks about Ollie Robinson's place in the side. The talk around Cook is whether he's quick enough, but he's done it at most levels now. He's played for the Lions. Is this the summer that Little Chef wins a test cap?
Feels like it could be, couldn't it? I suppose he's done the graduation for the Lions, which isn't actually playing for the test side. It's basically telling the ECB that you don't want to go on another Lions tour. That's the step before you play test cricket. So they kind of allowed him to do some white ball stuff over the winter, and he's actually been doing pretty well at that, all told. You're right. As you laid it out there, we're in a situation now where it is just more open than it has ever been before. In part because of Robinson, I suppose, because he was being groomed as natural successor to one of Broder Anderson, and now he's found himself having to do a bit more to amass trust.
Crossroads summer, he said.
Which is probably a bit dramatic, really, considering actually you look at it and you kind of assumed for the longest time that there would just be so many different bowlers to pick from. But there aren't really, are there? Chris Wokes is, as old as Stuart Broad, essentially. I've probably given him a few more years. He's in his mid-30s. Josh Tongue is hurt. Joffrey Archer, we know all about that. So there is a, clearer path into that place. I suppose what they'll want to work out, though, is whether Sam Cook will play in Australia. And that'll probably govern who gets to go between him and Atkinson, say, for their first test. Again, you said at the start, there's a long time to go before we even need to discuss that. But yeah, I mean, it absolutely can't hurt doing what he did with the Kookaburra ball, especially doing it in a way that, seemed to enhance what he does so well. Because he talked about how important seam presentation is, which is one of the things they talk of as a real strength of his, and unerring accuracy, as we discussed with Toby earlier. Again, something he does really well. It's not the case that he's been taking wickets for so long that quite a few batters have thought, why don't I just step down and plonk him back over his head? It doesn't work like that. Certainly doesn't work like that with him. So, yeah, you think this is a summer, especially with the nature of cricket that's being played at the front of the summer with so much white ball cricket, that surely this will be a chance to at least give him a cap ahead of what lies ahead.
I mean, it is interesting, though, given everything that England have banged on about over countless Ashes tours, and obviously... Here we are talking about the Ashes already, because we always end up talking about England going to Australia. But fundamentally, I suppose England discovered over the last two Ashes tours in particular that a churn of right-arm medium pacers is not going to win in Australia. And yet, the one guy who has stood out in this first round is, to all intents and purposes, a right-arm medium pacer. It doesn't have the height, doesn't have the release point that obviously release points are in vogue with the selection of Bashir and Hartley, but also... with Ollie Robinson's retaining his preeminence among the next rank of seamers because of that release point.
Robinson and Craig Overton a couple of summers ago.
Well, exactly.
It was the release point twins.
It was the release point twins. So, there's a danger that getting excited about Sam Cook this summer would be the wrong thing to do in case it's not going to work in Australia. But to come back to that point made at the top, he's done it with a Kookaburra in a round where no one else could get a result. And that's got to count for something. I mean, if that release point, if that presentation of the seam is as important as the release point, or as important as hooping around corners or being a magician like Jimmy, I mean, it probably is. Glenn McGrath wasn't exactly the quickest bowler in the world, but his presentation of the seam was impeccable at all times, and he got rewards by getting infinitesimal amounts of movement from a unrelenting length. And so, if Cook can prove that that is the method that can win, then by all means get him in there. And, he certainly hasn't disproved it with that performance.
Cook, as mentioned, sat out this second round, sat on his average of 7.9, I think it is. my brother texted me the other day and said 2,700s scored in this round of the Tempo. Must be a record for April. I don't know the answer to that because I haven't been able to drill down into the guru deep enough. It certainly is for a round of the Champo in April with a Kookaburra. It seems, from talking to Toby there, that we kind of had a little bit of a perfect storm with the weather and the pitches and the pace that can be is available. and the ball, which you know, as been touched on, goes soft, and the seam is less pronounced in the first place, and so on. Something else that I want to bring up here, and I'm sure you're both gagging for some heavy roller chat.
Oh yeah,
but yes. it's not. I mean, I think this has been, you know, written about and discussed. April actually isn't the worst time of the year for batters, and particularly since 2019, when the heavy roller use of the heavy roller sort of came back in much more liberally. In that summer, 2019. In the second round, there were 2,300, so not quite 27, but pretty good, pretty good effort. The last three years, obviously COVID, 2020, there was no cricket in April, but the last three years, the season started with 1,900s in round one, 2,000s in round one. Miller, I think you saw five of them at Chelmsford.
I did.
and in 2023, there were 1,900s in round one. So although the Kookaburra has sort of exacerbated that, it's not kind of that unusual to see batters sort of making hay at this in this sort of frosty, chilly time of the summer.
Yeah, well, I mean, the heavy roller, I think the change was from allowing it for the use for the first innings, and then the pitch just deteriorates. It was you're allowed to use it. You have the option as the batting team to use it for every innings of the four thereafter. So yeah, it just irons out anomalies. It just makes it smooth as glass. It just means that, you know, that early life, the early moisture that might have got the ball to nibble, is not necessarily there for the new ball. And so, you know, and as Toby was saying, the Kookaburra, I suppose, exacerbates that need to strike with a new ball, because everybody knows that window is like 12 to 15 overs wide at maximum, and therefore see through that and you're bedding in. So I think it did exacerbate it, but as you say, it's not a completely new phenomenon. But I suppose the wider problem is, you know, it's all very well having the roller to iron anomalies, but until pitches are quicker, and that's something that with the weather we've had, I'm sure we'll talk about Worcestershire and their issues with the flooded pitches and the likelihood they might have to move and all the rest of it. You know, we know full well there's only so many miracles groundsmen can produce. You cannot turn a sponge pudding into a whacker when it just doesn't stop raining. So if the ball isn't going to come onto the bat quickly, there's very little that can be done about the use of a different type of ball. It's not going to change the fact that you're not going to replicate those conditions where you're leaving balls on length on day one at the Gabba. You're not going to be doing that in the same way in English conditions. So you're not going to be able to replicate that down under feeling that I think is obviously at the back of everyone's minds when they bring in these experiments in the first place.
The weather's an important point as well, because I think going into that final day of the second round, I counted about seven games that were potentially in the final stages of what they're going on there, whether it was, you know, someone close to being bowled out in a third innings for an innings victory, or, you know, setting up a chase, things like that. So the weather has definitely, you know, scuppered aspects of this experiment to a degree. And, yeah, not least with the pitches. I think one of the main bits of feedback from around the counties has been, because the pitches are softer, whatever movement you get from the seam is minimal. And when it does actually do something, it's slow enough that batters can adjust. So it's not really, you're not really getting the full scope. But I suppose even of the Kookaburra ball to be that guy who defends it, it's just not quite worked out. And again, it feels like you end up talking about scheduling, really, because the reason it's played in these two rounds is because all the teams are playing. You know, otherwise you get an even more unbalanced competition than there already is in Division One, say, where not everyone plays each other twice, where you've got, right, so let's say three quarters of you are going to play with this ball that no one likes, and then everyone's going to play with the ball that everyone likes, you know, later on.
I was going to say, Parrish has thought that the competition might lose some of its integrity.
But I suppose, you know, the reason they're playing them now is because of the, you know, how jam-packed the summer schedule is. So yeah, it always comes down to schedule, doesn't it? Heavy rollers and schedule, that's all we ever talk about eventually.
The old classics, roll out the hits. Obviously, one aspect of this is about bringing other kinds of bowlers into the game, not just right arm medium pacers, spinners in particular, and whether they can take their chance, literally because they're having to bowl a lot more overs, the leading wicket taker in the leading wicket takers across both divisions are spinners, Cameron Steele of Surrey in Division 1, Alex Thompson of Derbyshire in Division 2. We're actually going to hear a bit of Steele talking to Matt Roller about his experience bowling with the Kookaburra after Surrey's game against Somerset at the Oval.
No, it feels great. It's just lovely to have an opportunity to bowl lots of overs and contribute for the team. Yeah, I think spinners around the country are happy to have had more of a bowl than they otherwise would have in previous seasons in April. But yeah, the ball goes soft quite quickly, so I think you do need to have spinners in the team with a Kookaburra ball. I mean, I've spent lots of time in Australia, so I like bowling with a Kookaburra ball, of course, in hand. So yeah, I'm not against it, but you seem as like disagree with me. I don't think it necessarily goes out of shape or anything. It just doesn't swing as much and goes softer, and the Aussie boys would probably say the same. I think maybe it's just bowlers with more pace probably find it slightly easier, and if pitches are slow, then it kind of nullifies the danger of the ball, really. Yeah, we can all certainly see the reasons behind it. It's obviously pretty well thought out. But, I mean, for us as a club, we win fairly consistently when we're playing with the Dukes and five seamers, so we probably feel more that way. But, you know, we'll try and win with whatever we get dealt.
Yeah, Miller, so spinners leading the wicket-taking charts. We probably wouldn't have picked the identities of those two, but there was also interesting performances, using that word advisedly, but from Dan Lawrence, who we're using with the new ball and have decided he's an all-rounder now, Matt Critchley, Calvin Harrison, Rob Yates, also I think qualifies as interesting, and then Division 2, James Coles at Sussex, Mason Crane, who's gone to Glamorgan looking for game time. So, I mean, this is the experiment working, isn't it?
Well, indeed. I mean, Dan Lawrence is just an interesting performer, isn't he? I mean, let's face it, the squirrel in the blender is something that will invite mockery every time he runs in. But, you know, we saw him in the way that he bowled in the Caribbean and in his brief England dalliance a few years ago, that, you know, he gets traction. He gives the ball a rip. He hits a seam and grips on the seam to turn it sharply at awkward angles. And, you know, going to Surrey, where obviously Will Jacks has been their lead spinner in a championship-winning season already, it's incredible the alchemy that Gareth Batty does perform with his part-time spinners down there. It almost feels like a betrayal of his breed, doesn't it, to have the likes of Verdi there, pure spinners who you know, perhaps you would have imagined a spin coach would have said to his bowlers, right, here we go, lads, spin all the way. I'm gonna get you in and show you how it's done. But no, he decided, no, you can rip it, have a go. So Jacks has gone on and taken a 6 for England on debut, and Dan Lawrence is now taking wickets in with the new ball and setting up improbable victory chases. I mean, he's doing everything that's...
And opening the batting.
And opening the batting as well. He's already done everything in these first rounds that were part of the reasons for his move from Essex here. Because, you know, with great respect to Essex, obviously, when you've got Simon Harmer as the lead spinner at Chelmsford, the part-time offerings of the squirrel and the blender are not likely to get a look in. And yet, here he goes to the acreage at the Oval, and he's given top billing as a spinner, which is remarkable, and augurs well for his prospects of finally getting another chance with England, especially, which I suppose is the other talking point, when we have the situation, obviously Vish watching Hartley not doing much up at in a rain-affected game, and then Sher Bashir not playing at all in that opening round, which was, you know, given Somerset's anomalous reputation as the spin bowling Sidrabad County, then to not pick the premier spinner of England's winter for slightly odd reasons, especially with Jack Leach out, felt like a missed opportunity from them, and they did try to rectify it second time around. But yeah, broadly speaking, I mean, the fact we're talking about so many spinners is proof that there's something resembling a success in this policy, even if it's perhaps not the success that people might have expected or hoped for when the Kookaburra round was introduced.
Nathan Lyon did edge Hartley out of the side for Lancashire's trip to Hampshire. You watched Sher Bashir bowl at the Oval, mm-hmm. I think. But I was going to say, interesting to hear Cam Steele talking about the feel of the Kookaburra in hand. And spinners, English spinners, do often have trouble with that, with the Dukes. I mean, that, and that big seam. So another reason why the Kookaburra might not be all bad.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, it's not something that I really anticipated before. You just assume that you'd need to play more spinners because there's less in it for the seamers. I think it was Sam Northeast told us that I think he came in at tea on that first day at Lord's and looked at Mason Crane and thought, sorry, mate, I don't know what I've done here. which I suppose is what's similar to, you know, what Sussex did with Shobashir, because Lewis Gregory at the end of that first round said, yeah, I think I've messed up here. And even, you know, Toby earlier in the show talking about how much it did in pre-season, you kind of thought, oh, they're maybe hoodwinked a bit by the Kookaburra ball and what it did in those, you know, I suppose, the end of March. But the seam thing is really interesting because I suppose when you're a spinner, you kind of assume, obviously, you know, you'd assume from our position anyway, that a lot of it is about hitting as much of the seam as possible. But I suppose it isn't. I suppose the reason you get the variety of turn is because you kind of just, I was going to say making it up. They're obviously not making it up. But I suppose there is an element of what we call natural variation, which relies, regardless of how much of the seam you land on, you need to impart as much spin on the ball as possible. And that's actually easier with a smoother, quote-unquote, ball. And someone will like, if you look at someone like Mason Crane in particular, gives the ball a big rip, some mostly comes out from, you know, the side of the back of his hand. And I suppose if you're not, you know, if you're able to put your hand around more of the ball, then, you know, you end up imparting those kind of revolutions on the ball. Because, you know, Cam Steele's not a big guy with, you know, big hands, and he was giving it a rip at Old Trafford a couple of weeks before this round as well. So, yeah, it's been really interesting to see. And I wonder if, you know, a lot of people say that as a seamer, when you're bowling with a Kookaburra ball on these sorts of pitches, you can adjust to movement off the seam, especially if the pace is not there out of the hand. And I suppose, if you're a spinner, particularly a leg spinner, then it's kind of harder to react because the rip is that much greater and you get a bit of skid on it as well. So, no, it's been really, really interesting to see. Even, you know, you mentioned Crane there. I think Crane's figures were the fifth best that he'd taken in his first-class career, which is remarkable, really, because he's been around ages.
Yeah, and it's 4 for 60 or something like that. Yeah. Although in the second innings, I think it was 0 for 91.
Yes, so, and then there was that, yeah.
There's a learning curve, but obviously he's gone there to play more. And we obviously spoke to Toby, but Josh Dakaris has had quite a tough opening couple of rounds as well, having had some success last summer as a spinner for Middlesex. We can probably talk here about Sam Northeast as well. Miller, you saw some of that. I mean, if this was a week ago, that would be the main event. Time has moved on. He made 11 and naught at Cardiff, and you know, he's yesterday's man again. But 335 not out, breaking Gooch's long-standing record there for the highest scoring innings on that ground. Whether or not it was against the Kookaburra, and whether or not it was spinning much, it was quite an effort.
It was quite something to be there, to be perfectly honest. It certainly was the event of that first round, and you know, they got that sense at the close of the first day when I think he was 186 not out, and his exact words at the close: "I intend to be very greedy tomorrow." And, okay, ears prick up immediately because I think they were obviously into the second new ball by that stage. It hadn't done much. And so it was like, okay, he's on for a big one. And, you know, when Sam Northeast says he wants to be greedy, we're talking about a guy who's got 410 not out already to his county career. So, yeah, rocked up with full expectation of big runs, and he delivered in style. It was, yeah, it was quite an iconic moment because, you know, Gooch's 333 is, you know, stands out among triple centuries that have ever been scored, partly because of the identity of the man. He was obviously just a huge figure in English cricket, but also because it was Lord's and because it remained the highest score ever made in first-class cricket at Lord's. It always felt like the right thing to have at the top. I mean, we were crunching the numbers after Northeast innings. I think there'd been 2,800 matches at Lord's since 1814. So, you know, if you assume in a first-class game that you're going to take 30 out of 40 wickets on average. That's probably pushing 70,000 innings have been played at Lords across 200 years, give or take, and that's probably a conservative estimate. And suddenly you're witnessing the highest score ever made at the most iconic ground in cricket. It was an I was there moment, to be perfectly honest, in the first week of April. Very strange.
And you was there.
I was there. So was Josh DeCares, poor boy. But I mean, you know, you mentioned him. I mean, he's an interesting one, isn't he? Because, you know, the hard yakker that you say that he had some success last summer. I witnessed a lot of that success down at Chelmsford, and you know, he took an 8-for and a 7-for, but he bowled 47 overs and 38 overs, I think, for each of those results. So he hasn't actually done a lot different. He has been the beneficiary, again, of I suppose the accidental beneficiary of conditions being with Middlesex last year. They just desperately needed someone to just bowl overs because they were getting pushed around by everyone they played against. And this summer, obviously, the seamers aren't having much luck with the Kookaburra, so over to the spinner. You're getting your overs in by default. It's a little bit like what happened with England in India when, you know, Anderson arguably didn't bowl enough overs. You've got Ollie Robinson going lame. The conditions weren't conducive to attacking seam bowling. Mark Wood, obviously, when he played, was ineffectual in was the second test, wasn't it? And so, fine, over to you, lads. Knock yourselves out. You're going to get all day to bowl. Get me some wickets. I mean, that I suppose has been the on this occasion it didn't work for De Keers, but he has. I didn't see him doing anything different in the way that he went about his work. He's shown an aptitude for long spells. He doesn't seem to get disheartened by going long periods without much success. And you know, I don't think it will have done him any harm in the long term to just got overs under his belt in April as a spinner. It's again, this is the flip side of the Kookaburra experiment. I suppose it was two-pronged all along to weed out 60-mile-an-hour bowlers and to bring spinners into the game. And I think the latter has definitely been a success, even if the former jury's out about what it's done for seamers.
Indeed. Well, another ground where it was almighty flat was Edgbaston. Durham, having had their first game washed out, were then treated to a couple of hard days in the field by Warwickshire's top order. We did also see Ben Stokes bowling before and I think during sort of the intervals there. Vish, that's going to be something to look out for in this opening block of the Championship. Stokes has ruled out T20 World Cup participation. He's going to be honing that all-rounder role for Durham, and he won't have to do it with the Kookaburra ball, which is probably good given his state of his knees and shoulders and things.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he'll probably have to take the all-rounder role off of Matty Potts, won't he? Potts bagged his 100. You know, the World Cup makes everything, or rather, Stokes not going to the World Cup makes everything a lot easier, doesn't it? Because you're not going to be in a point where he's going to be rushing back for a Red Bull game of sorts before the Test Series. Because I think there is one, but it's quite awkwardly placed. I think if you're part of the squad, you probably won't play in it. But yeah, like I suppose he can take his time a bit now. You know, Durham have been pretty coy on when he will actually, you know, come in for them. But in part because I think he can just take his time now. So I suppose that, you know, it's an altogether better situation rather than last year where you leave the New Zealand tour, you think, is he going to get this surgery done? No, he's not. He's going to go to the IPL and use it as a glorified spa. And then he's going to come back and play for England, then he's not going to have it operated on in the winter because he's going to go to the World Cup. You know, judging by, I suppose, the noises from people who were watching him train and also the man himself, you know, he posted on Instagram talking about how he finally has his braced front knee back, you know, the full extension and going over it. I think it was described to me a while ago as if you're applying the front brace on your bicycle, essentially. So you're able to go over it and just send it.
Go over the handlebars. I've done that.
Essentially, yeah, but deliberately.
Not recommended, though. Yeah. So.
Shame you weren't holding a ball at the time. You could have seen how fast you really bowl. But so that seems to be all in working order as well. And, you know, he, like it's, this is off the back of India and, you know, him bowling, you know, the back end of that tour, slowly kind of teasing us throughout it, having told us at the start that he wouldn't. You kind of feel that Ben Stokes, the all-rounder, the Ben Stokes we knew in, 2019 was probably the last time, really? You know, that's coming back this year. I suppose it's like a Hollywood film, isn't it? They all get remade after a while, don't they? And this is, you know, 4 years later, we're getting, 5 years later, we're getting Ben Stokes, the all-rounder. But that'll be interesting. That'll be, it would have been quite cool to see how he fared with Kookaburra, because I think he'll probably miss those two rounds, whatever they are, because he'll be the, back in the middle of the summer when everyone's playing, and you know, obviously England duty calls at that point. But yeah, like that all seems in order, and in terms of what it means for Durham, if they can squeeze a little bit out of him, much in the same way that Yorkshire are being able to squeeze a bit of Brook and Root out in this early part of the season, then yeah, they'll only benefit from that, yeah.
But it's interesting, though, with the clarity that comes from that decision made early doors that, okay, fine, I'm not going to compete for the T20 World Cup. It just gives Stokes a chance just to breathe a bit. And, you know, he's obviously, everything's come in a bit of a rush with, you know, coming back from that broken finger and mental health break, and then suddenly becoming captain, and then Bazball and all the other chaos that, and the recall to the ODI World Cup. And it's been breathless. It's been fascinating. I mean, been quite a wild ride. But, I mean, yeah, he has looked to... He was bereft of batting form and couldn't bowl by the end of India. He looked spent, frankly, and it probably affected his captaincy as well, to be perfectly honest. Although I still think massively in credit there. But now suddenly, as you say, he's got this window all the way through till July. He could just take his time, much like James Anderson has, and Stuart Broad, for that matter, have been doing for what, since 2015, really. They've been Red Bull specialists. They can just pick and choose the moments that they go to the well, pick and choose the moments. They just put their feet up and think, right, I'll just go compose myself here. And it's no coincidence that both of them ended up, well, Anderson's still going, the longevity that they have got from that Red Bull specialism extends into way into the future. So, you know, on the one hand, it's great news for England's prospects of going out to Australia, which obviously is a huge carrot for Stokes, given his long history of his debut tour out there, and then obviously the post Bristol fracas and everything that's gone into that rivalry with Australia. It does feel that is that has to be his overriding goal, and suddenly it is. I mean, there's literally nothing else that is going to get in his peripheral vision between now and that rematch, barring obviously the home summer against West Indies and Sri Lanka, which you do feel like he can just build into proper loads, proper all-rounder, be the man that he was in 2020 against West Indies, was probably the absolute zenith of his international career, as far as I'm concerned. It was post Headingley. He'd proven the point that he's an unbelievably good player. And then suddenly that summer, until obviously his father's illness and everything that came with that, he was playing some of the most extraordinary cricket I've ever seen, to be perfectly honest. So, you know, it feels optimistic from an England perspective to have Stokes in a position where he can just focus on the one thing that, as he said all along, pre-Bazball and since, Test cricket matters to him deeply, and he's got a chance to prove it now.
I suppose he's also got to be a bit aware of what's coming this year. So what, there are 12 tests to come? You know, West Indies, Sri Lanka, the tour of Pakistan, tour of New Zealand. He also wants to play in the 100. I think that's quite important to factor in, because I think for him, there's a little bit of unfinished business there, given how the finger injury came about. And I think also he just wants to play in it, to play in it. And it will come at quite a strange time, given it's between both test series this summer. So,
yeah, he's got to be able to play at the start of it, because there's overlaps with the test.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But he's got, you know, like we're talking about, I suppose, India, the 2025 summer and the Australian winter, but he's got a hell of a lot coming up as well this year.
I think last time he played county cricket, he almost hit Josh Baker for six sixes and over, was it?
Five sixes and a four.
Yeah. So, obviously, yeah, plenty on the county circuit.
Probably it was one of the last innings where he actually bazballed, I think.
Yeah. That's probably fair.
Well, I'm sure that, yeah, plenty of bowlers looking forward to facing a bit of that in the next few weeks. Before we wrap up, a reminder to get involved with our women's cricket podcast, Power Play. The newest episode featuring a chat with Grace Harris will be available to download from Wednesday. Just search for ESPN Cricket Info Power Play on your preferred pod provider. Last thoughts before we go. Gents, we haven't mentioned Phil Salt's IPL form. We haven't mentioned Gloucestershire's 1.2 million losses. But
yes, well,
are you saying
probably a bigger conversation? But
so you're saying what Gloucestershire should do is they should put themselves forward in the IPL auction in order to get picked up, and then
that's the way to make up the shortfall. There's money over there.
I mean, there is a. I mean, Phil Salt is a great little story in itself, and you know he's going great guns. But you're right. The Gloucestershire's financial issues, coupled with Worcestershire's announcement that you know they are genuinely thinking about moving away from New Road, and factored into Gloucestershire's issues are the likelihood that they're also going to move away from the Neville Ground, which obviously the WG Grace bought for them in 1889. You know, these are two iconic county venues that are just on the outer. I mean, admission here, I've never been to New Road, and that is probably a shocking thing to say, but the fact is, for most of my career, Worcestershire has not been a focus of any attention in the way that it was always the traditional start of an Ashes tour. Don Bradman's team would have come over here, and you know it would be lay out the red carpet for touring sides at New Road because of the beauty and the majesty and the pomp of county cricket.
And the Ladies' Pavilion.
And the Ladies' Pavilion. And the cakes. And all the things I've heard about in many, many, many years of reading and you know, the evocative imagery that comes with it. But the reality is it's on a floodplain in a damp climate that is getting floodier. And it's not a healthy situation, but it does lean very heavily into the existential angst of county cricket. I mean, we've got the 100 announcements are due imminently, presumably. We're hearing rumours about what the share of the pie will be for the big teams, and the little teams are going to probably get muscled off the ball to a larger extent than perhaps they had envisaged early on in negotiations, when the assumption was all the 18 counties you'll all get a share of the pie. I was like, well, actually, what have you got to show for it? Do you have a test ground that's going to bring in the revenue? No. Well, bugger off. You can pick the scraps up. So that there is, it's a one to watch, really. It's a bubbling under situation for all these have-not counties. We've known about it for a long time. The important thing, I suppose, is when this equity carve-up does happen, that it's an equitable carve-up in the best possible way, that you know, it may be fair, say, that Surrey or Lords or whoever, Edgbaston, does get a larger share of the pie because they've got more overheads to run these big venues that are going to be bringing in the revenue. But it's important that, you know, New Road and Neville Road and all the other places that are fundamental to the ethos and the environment of English cricket get enough to function according to the means that they need. They need enough to keep the lights on, essentially. Especially the floodlights, because, you know, why do you even need them? But, you know, these are the issues that I think we'll be talking about a lot more as the summer progresses.
Good to get back to some existential angst.
Isn't it? I mean, I've missed it a bit.
But all that factors into, you know, the 100 bid and the, you know, whether, you know, like, for example, Worcestershire didn't apply for a Tier 1 women's team because they just didn't think they could, you know, afford it, essentially. But, you know, we're in a situation where, you know, the ECB and the host counties are going to have their own, you know, sell off their own bits of the 100 with their own different slices. But, you know, it's a time for the non-test venues to be as strong as possible. And, you know, you look at whether it's a Gloucestershire account or the situation with Worcestershire, they're just going to take anything, really, aren't they? And that kind of power that was there, even, you know, when you look back and think that in 2014, Worcestershire were able to spend between seven and eight million on making the ground more flood resistant. You know, those kind of numbers are staggering now. You can't imagine any county,
They should ask for that money back, actually.
Well, absolutely, yeah. So they kept the seat. How long was the warranty for? But, you know, that kind of stuff, like, to think that, you know, 10 years ago, that those counties were in better health is remarkable, really. Obviously, COVID happened, you know that, but it was back then, I suppose, a time like that was unfathomable to even the smaller counties.
Well, I look forward to further discussions on that front as the summer goes on, as ever. Cheery stuff. But that will do us for today. There are two more rounds of the County Championship to be played in April, and bowlers will doubtless be hoping the return of the Dukes finally causes some hazard for batting. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to see how the early season is progressing. Until then, my thanks to Miller, Vish and Toby Rowland-Jones, and to you all for listening to the Switch It podcast on ESPNcricketinfo.com.